And I got to one point early in the game where I was given the choice if I wanted to see the big dogs or the little dogs. And I was like, but I want to see no dogs. And being incapable of making this decision, I stopped playing the game.
That is deeply Matthew.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club. Book club!
For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this episode number 108, we are talking about visual novels.
Which might be a stretch to call books.
Might be. A bit. My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian in Guelph, Ontario, Canada.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
So visual novels, something I think the majority of our listeners will be completely unfamiliar with, as I believe most of us were unfamiliar with a month ago.
Oh, yes.
We could start with our background, but I feel like I had, you know, more familiarity than, like, most of my library patrons, perhaps.
I've realized that, like, already by standards of expertise, just by knowing what a visual novel is, you're probably already an expert in the library world because you know more than 90% of other people mm-hmm. in our field. And so now actually mm-hmm. having played mm-hmm. one, you're like an expert.
mm-hmm. Yep, for the library field.
It's like how I feel sometimes when people are like, Matthew, tell me about zines in libraries. I'm like, I've never done anything with zines in libraries. However, I'm an expert apparently.
mm-hmm. You're an expert at zines and you work at a library.
Yeah, or like don't even right now. I have a degree and I know about zines. Yeah. And so I can give you advice, but I've never actually done anything with them in my jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So visual novels, look, you're saying it's not a book, Megan, but I would argue that it falls into the same sort of category as something like an audiobook or like a comic or something.
Well, actually, you're right. It actually compares maybe a little bit more to not quite sure what to call it, a software or a company called Tumble Books, which is like ebooks mm-hmm. for children. And so it involves more of that, like a little bit of interactivity, largely static visual component based off of picture books, does include text, which most of the did any of the visual novels not include text?
No, that would be interesting though.
Yeah, so they might have had a voice-over or narration component, but it was all based on text that you could read as well. I think Matthew did a whole bunch of Twitch streams, which are up on YouTube if you want to see some of them. And so we read out a whole bunch of the narration. So yes, you could call them books.
Let's define what this is. We haven't even talked about what a visual novel is.
I know. I was like, what? Hold on, y'all. Back up and give our lovely listeners a definition.
A visual novel, my interpretation of a visual novel, is a mostly text-based narrative game is in quotation marks, that pairs images with text and dialogue and narration and sometimes other stuff in a format that is semi-interactive. I think the most comparable thing are game books or choose your own adventure novels, that sort of thing, where you're often given choices such as, like, in a scenario, what do you want to do? And then you make a choice and your character and the story goes in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
These can vary dramatically for visual novels in how much choice there is, how much agency there is in the game, in the novels, games, content, stories. Some of them can be very linear. And while you do make choices, you're going to have the same end. Others are basically just ebooks where you're hitting the next button over and over again, where there's like no interactivity. And then mm-hmm. others have multiple branching paths, multiple endings. You find like games where you like kind of can choose to date another character in them. And so like that's kind of like one of the routes could be you're going to date this person or this person. And the two choices you make allow you to choose whichever one you like best and follow that storyline through. And that can be, it could be a dating game or it could be something else completely different as well. And there's also, they're definitely related to text mm-hmm. adventures. If people have ever played those, the old kind of computer games where you're presented with a bunch of text and then you type in a command that could be go north, pick up object or whatever it is, eat orange.
They also kind of reminded me of like point and click adventure yep. games.
Yeah, definitely. I think they're tied together in these like very narratively driven game experiences.
Mm-hmm. Like the important points were like plot and character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's also interactive fiction, which I don't know if we've mentioned yet.
Yes. That's like the text adventures that I mentioned.
Yeah, that's similar. I feel like there is if any of our listeners have ever heard of Twine games, mm-hmm. That is a popular tool's the right word. Yeah, for making interactive fiction, which is kind of like a visual novel but without as much visual.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like interactive fiction as well, like it can be the text adventure where you're typing actual commands mm-hmm. or it could be one where you're just clicking on links. You right. know, they're all kind of fall into this text-based narrative game structure thing.
Yeah.
And there's different versions of it.
I've made a Twine game, so I am an expert.
Yep.
I've made a thing in Twine that is not a game.
Was it interactive fiction?
No. So Pandemic Legacy. Pandemic is a board game about cooperative board game about curing diseases around the world. Pandemic Legacy is a game in which the results of one game affect the next one that you play. You're supposed to play it like, I think like mm-hmm. 12 to 24 times. And there's an ongoing storyline and you might rip up cards or write on the board and characters can die and things like that.
Yeah.
So I made a Twine thing that was the worst possible Pandemic Legacy scenario where you lose every game and what happens to the world in that case.
Oof.
It's really just kind of a spreadsheet.
Oh, everybody get their bingo Surprise! Cards. Yeah. I made a spreadsheet.
Make that off.
That is literal for listeners who may be new. We have a bingo card. You can check
that
out.
That's one of the squares.
Yeah, Matthew mentioned spreadsheet. Making a spreadsheet is one of the things on it.
I like you made an is this an interactive spreadsheet made via a different program, essentially?
It's a random number generator is what it is. And so you just click like next game and then it gives you the results of that game in like a grid format. So it's like a spreadsheet. Anyway, so visual novels. I think we have a definition now that might make sense to some of our listeners.
Yeah.
I like the easiest way is like imagine an ebook that you're reading on a device or a computer and it's just a choose your own adventure thing. If you're familiar with those, it just you get to a point and it's like what choice do you want to make and you can choose where you want the story to go from there.
And it's illustrated.
Yes, and there's yeah. the visual novel, the visual aspect is important. And these can go very more emphasis on the visual aspect of it and less on the textual aspect of it.
I would say it's a little more like reading a graphic novel yeah. and having it be a choose your own adventure.
I would disagree with that.
Why?
I think that
Mr. Graphic Novel Expert who has all the opinions about what exactly constitutes and does not constitute a graphic novel.
I think they can fall into that group, but of the ones I played this month, I would not count any of them in that area. I would say they're more like a picture book because you're getting a lot of text and limited images.
Well, a lot of static backgrounds. Like the backgrounds tend to be...
Yeah, okay. I agree on the one hand, but Matthew, they are way more like a graphic novel than a book. Because it's not literally just a bunch of text.
You're right.
That then you pick from. It is pictures with some text that then you pick from.
Like, I will say, there was a graphic novel that came out a few years ago that was very popular, and I thought it was terrible because artistically it was a disaster. And it was very much like a visual novel in that it just reused the same art for characters and was just dialogue all the time. And I'm like, this might be a valuable story, but as a comic, it is unimpressive, I suppose is the nicest way of putting it. And so these are very unimpressive comics.
I think there's a visual language to comics and graphic novels that aren't well represented in the visual novel format.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And one other thing I noticed was that they tend to be first person based. So you don't often see the protagonist because the protagonist is kind of you. I only saw like one or two examples where you get that outside view where you see the protagonist a little better.
I think there were a few that had that. But I was going to say some of them have the really fancy expensive ones that I don't think any of us played. Have like full animated cutscenes after decisions. And so it is more like an anime, choose your own cartoon than a fiction novel necessarily.
Yes. Did anyone play any or look at any visual novels that were outside of the Humble Bundle thing?
Okay. Do we have to explain what this is?
I guess so.
A bundle in these cases are things where you pay one price and you get a whole bunch of games or books or something. They're bundled together. It's like the big deal for academic publishing, except things you might actually want. And there was recently itch.io, which is a platform for indie game and other stuff publishing, recently did a bundle in support of Black Lives Matters and the protests that were going on. Do any of you remember exactly how many things were in this bundle? Like 1,800 items or something?
It was over 1,000 for sure.
It was some absurd number. And it was like $5. And it raised like millions and millions of dollars for like bail funds and things like that. But it was also like, if you play 1% of the games in this, like you have gotten your money's worth.
Yeah.
And in this bundle of an absurd number of things, there were a bunch of visual novels, which is where most of the ones I played this month came from.
Yeah. So I played... I mean, when I was on the stream with Matthew, we played one that was not in the bundle.
Previous experiences?
Yeah.
Or have we not gotten to that yet?
Let's start with that.
Sure. No previous experiences.
Me neither.
Anna, that is incorrect.
Oh, that is incorrect, is it? How is it incorrect?
We once tried to play a visual novel together and got bored of it.
That sounds like us. What was that?
I don't remember. It does. We played Doki Doki Literature Club. Do you remember this?
No, I don't remember this. Hold on. Let me look up Doki Doki Literature Club.
D-O-K-I.
Hey, Googling during the...
Yes, okay. I don't know if that's still on the bingo cards.
I don't know if that's on the bingo card anymore either, but... Okay, Doki Doki Literature Club. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, this one.
It was
yes.
A big popular visual novel from a couple of years back, partially because it was free, but it became a big thing because of the horror and meta aspect of it made it kind of interesting. And it was like kind of it started as a standard Japanese high school style dating game. And then eventually you played it and replayed it. And like there was a bunch of meta aspect of it and creepy horror things. We didn't get that far because you had to play like an hour of this like boring Japanese high school simulator.
I watched a full length playthrough of it once.
Yeah.
And yeah, that game's wild.
I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff in it. I think it plays with the tropes and formats and of that genre really well.
Can I give a spoiler for that game?
Yeah, I think it's several years old, and most of the people listening to this probably won't play it.
Skip ahead by like 30 seconds. So like, you mentioned that there's some like meta horror aspects where you play the game over and over and like things start to like change and become undone. And like, clearly there is like a character who is like controlling aspects of the game. And so it is not like, It's not like horror. Yeah, it's like very weird. And at one point very late in the game, to like defeat this character, you have to go into like the install files for the game.
Yep. And you have like, to delete a file.
Yeah.
What?
It's wild. It does some really interesting stuff. And I think, honestly, the best experience might be watching someone else play at, like, double speed on YouTube.
Yeah. Yeah. That is what I did.
Yeah. So, Anna, we played some of that together.
I very slightly, vaguely, maybe kind of remember this.
RJ, do you have any experience with these?
I do. So, when I was a younger person, when I was a little teen RJ, who was interested in anime and you know, related media, I played some visual novels that were like very of the sort of traditional dating simulator type.
RJ, sorry, I want to interrupt you here very briefly.
Yeah.
You're saying when I was younger, when I was interested in anime and those sorts of things, as though you are not currently wearing a shirt covered in Pokemon. Covered in Pokemon.
I might be wearing a shirt covered in Pokemon and drinking from a cup that is sitting on a Pokemon coaster from the Pokemon Cafe in Tokyo.
You might be.
I might be. I might have an anime character keychain hanging from my backpack these days, which is like, but it's like a sophisticated one. It is a from the Ghibli Museum. And not only is it like a Miyazaki character, it is like one of the characters that is only in like the film that they show at the museum. So it is like a very, very niche reference.
Which one is it?
Egg Princess. You wouldn't know her.
Is that the one you saw when you went there?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw the one about like a nature spirit and someone going on a hike, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw Egg Princess and Mr. Doughboy. It was a good flick.
Yeah. I was gonna claim that Pokemon was mainstream now, but then you went deep nerd, so respect.
Well, I will say respect. I will say that I don't watch the Pokemon anime. Like, I enjoy Pokemon as an intellectual property, and I play the games, and I watch other people play the games online, but I do not watch the anime itself. Anyway, when I was a much bigger anime nerd, I can't remember the last time that I've like sat down and watched an anime. I read manga once in a while, but yeah, I'm very like selective in what I read and watch now, and that was not the case when I was a teenager. I would read and watch and play anything that was put in front of me. And yeah, I played some visual novels. I played a visual novel that I was probably too young to play, let's just put it that way, because that is certainly a popular subgenre.
Yep. And also, though, I feel like that is, like, in line with the read a novel that I was much too young to read sort of thing, too, that we all do.
Oh, yeah.
if you're a heavy reader, you have certainly read a novel I was much too young to read.
Absolutely. True. Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely, like, yeah. Young RJ, who was interested in, like, anime and romance and sex. Is using visual novels to safely explore those interests. Yeah, so for many years I did not play any visual novels. I have one that I have not finished. I started playing a visual novel called Tusks, which is about like a person who joins this band of orcs, and so it is an orc dating simulator.
Wait, and you love orcs?
I love orcs, it's true.
I just saw one of your old orc drawings the other day and was like, oh, that's from RJ.
I was about to ask if any of your occupation drawings are online.
I'm sure they're somewhere.
Okay. Were they on Twitter?
Yeah, like I tweeted them. You'd have to go back a bit. We'll link to one of my orc drawings, yeah. Yeah, so that one, more recently I was playing, and I just finished this month, so this is also kind of like something that I played this month, but mostly I played it several months ago, a game called Bury Me, My Love, which I think is maybe an edge case in terms of like fitting into the genre. And I think, or maybe it's like a subgenre, where it was developed for play on the mobile phone because you are, most of the gameplay takes place through like texting, like this, you know, like your phone in the game is a phone. Does that make sense? But anyway, I played it on the Nintendo Switch, which like in retrospect was kind of weird. But it is a very similar, like, you know, having dialogue options that affect how the story goes and sort of like limited static visuals. But it is a game about a Syrian refugee who is trying to travel to France. And you are her boyfriend, who is still in Syria and is going to travel at a later time. And you are like texting her as she is trying to, you know, get to France, and like all of the various things that go wrong and like obstacles that she hits, and like trying from afar, to help her, through them, or advise her, or just like comfort her and talk to her. And it's a very stressful game, and, you know, it's designed to be a stressful game and to, you know, create this sense of helplessness of like trying to help this person from afar. Yeah. So that is probably very different from the number of like dating related games that I've played, but that might be one that would be intriguing. I think I think I bought it on the Switch and it was pretty cheap. It was pretty affordable.
What you're saying there about being involved in anime leading you to visual novels, I think is really kind of a way a lot of people found their way into these things. I remember both visual novels and light novels being these things that I knew existed, but that were inaccessible in North America in English.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really kind of showing my age and when I was an anime fan. But the example, like, I think the first visual novel I ever heard of, and for a long time, the only visual novel I knew existed by name other than my concept, was one called, and I had to look up what it was actually called today, but it's Radical Dreamers. And it was available for the Super Nintendo in Japan. And it was like a Chrono Trigger sequel. Chrono Trigger being a role-playing game that I really enjoyed. And so I knew this thing existed, and it was like something that people talked about existing, but it was, you had to be able to read Japanese in order to play it.
Mm.
So going off of this, something I discovered today is like visual novels are something that originated in Japan. And I was reading today about how they came about. And one of the reasons is that the text adventure, interactive fiction things were like you're typing commands into a window and saying, you know, eat apple, go north, that sort of thing, apparently cannot work with Japanese grammar very easily.
Mm.
And so back in the 80s, these kind of grew out of people wanting to make games, narrative kind of games, but not being able to because of the language that you had access to, which I thought was fascinating to see as an origin for this and why they existed in Japan when people in other countries might be making something else, had other tools at their disposal to make text-based narrative interactive experiences. But then in the last decade, they finally come over to North America. I think because it's been easier to distribute games digitally. And so Japanese ones started coming over, and then people in non-Japanese countries started making their own because the tools were more widely available, the tools to make them, and the tools to distribute them were also more widely available.
Yeah. I was talking to a game developer friend recently, and mentioned, you know, we were doing an episode on visual novels, and you know, one of the things he had to say about it was that it is like a popular genre or form, I guess, for new game developers to like try out. or to start in, because like the tools to create visual novels are a lot more accessible than some other game creation tools. So the barriers are lower.
Anyway, so while I knew of visual novels, I had finished a grand total of one before this month. And the other one I had played, other than Doki Doki Literature Club, was one called Butterfly Soup, which is about lesbian teenagers playing baseball. And I got to one point early in the game where I was given the choice if I wanted to see the big dogs or the little dogs. And I was like, but I want to see no dogs. And being incapable of making this decision, I stopped playing the game.
oh, boy.
That is deeply Matthew.
It really is. I was just like, but I cannot choose both of these decisions. And it's like, if it was like, do you want your arm chopped off or your leg chopped off? I'm like, ah, like leg, I guess? Like, oh, no. Mm, like, but I would make a decision. But like big dogs, little dogs. I'm just like, no, I can't do this.
Could not suspend your disbelief.
Yeah.
To pretend you were a person who wanted to see dogs.
No, I just couldn't do it. I was incapable of doing this. Could not make this decision.
Oh, man. So what did you decide to do this month, Matthew?
No, okay, before I get to that, the one I finished was called 2064 Read Only Memories, which was like a cyberpunk visual novel, and I love cyberpunk stuff. It had really nice, like, kind of retro style graphics, and it took me like 3 years to finish, just because I would stop playing it for years at a time. But I finally got through it earlier this year. What I did this month, because as the name of the podcast implies, we're masochistic about reading. I looked at that bundle I mentioned earlier that had 1,800 things in it, and I looked and I'm like, okay, there's like, you know, at least 80 to 100 visual novels in here. I'm going to play them because otherwise, like, I will never get around to playing the stuff from this bundle. Like, just it's not going to happen, because I know from buying previous bundles of games like this, you might play one or two. And I decided to stream them online on Twitch and put them up on YouTube because I was really curious about streaming stuff. I think it's interesting. And because for so many people, the way they access and learn about visual novels is through people streaming them online. And so one of my friends, Kathleen DeVere, has streamed a bunch of visual novels online. And that's probably been one of my major exposures to it, is watching her play them with some other people. So yeah, I've streamed them all month. I've done 29 days in a row, every day. If you've been following us on Twitter or Facebook, you've seen me posting things and you're like, what is Matthew doing? I don't care. And that's what it is. What I'm going to do is link to my three favorite streams from this month in the show notes. And if you are curious about what we're talking about, those are the three that I would recommend you you go and take a look at. It's me and other people playing these games, reading them, making comments, discussing things with people that might be in the chat. That's what it is. You can play it at double speed.
I was going to say about the masochistic episode, about all of them are about the masochistic aspect of this project. It was not actually necessarily the playing or reading of these materials. It was actually the like logistics and the technology. It's like an entire month of trying to get them all up and running and keep your internet working well enough to stream it and organize all the people that you had arranged to do them with you. And like,
yeah, I would really like to thank everyone that co-hosted with me. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. So, RJ, you did it. Megan did it. Previous co-host on the show, Amanda, did it. My friend Stephanie did one. The other co-host of another podcast called Finish It, which is a choose your own adventure podcast, did an episode with me. Friend of the podcast, Kira, did several episodes with me. There's one that was done before this month started that was with Megan, who is a different Megan, but who also did a stream with me. I think that's everybody. So thank you to everyone who did that with me.
Thank you from us too. And no thank yous to me. I did not do it.
Thank you to everybody that watched them and came and chatted with me while I was streaming. I really appreciate it.
It was really great. I was really happy that you put that together, Matthew. So thank you. I was able to get in so many more and reminded me, like, of how much I used to watch other people play video games and computer games all the time. Like, that was half of my childhood because there was only one computer. Mm. So you watched everybody play.
It's something I do. Like, I often have people playing RPGs and games and stuff on while I'm, like, doing cross-stitch and stuff.
Mm.
So just kind of a background sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And my partner watches Magic card games all the time, but he watches them at 2x speed, so it's really annoying to have in the background.
I do that too.
Yes. Yes.
Although, I don't know, like, really annoying to have on the background seems like a good descriptor for me, to be honest.
So why don't we talk about some of the ones that we played and watched?
Sure. I'll go first, since I have a bunch to talk about. But also, I think the ones I'm going to be talking about are ones that overlap with some of the ones that you played. So the first one, and these are the ones I'm going to link to in the show notes as well. The first one I'll mention is Dungeons and Lesbians, which RJ, we played together.
Ooh, yes, we did.
And this is one about you're a group of people playing Dungeons and Dragons, which seems like a thing that shows up multiple times in these games. So you control a person playing the game, and then you also control your character within the game a little bit. And this is a dating one where you choose one of the other people you're playing with and go on a date with them, maybe, depending on how good you are, what choices you make.
Yeah.
It had a very cute art style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dungeons and Lesbians was adorable. I wanted to say about the concept, it, like, in retrospect, yeah, we played multiple games where this was the conceit, where you were, like, dating members of your D&D party. And in retrospect, it makes sense. Like, it's a good fit because you have this cast of characters that is all, they're all in the same place at the same time. And so it's really easy to, like, make options for who you want to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, like, a good, like, you probably know each other a little, but maybe you don't know each other that well. Maybe you're just here to play the game together. So, like, that getting to know them aspect makes sense. And, yeah, and it has that fun meta aspect of, like, playing the game and then playing the game within the game that you're playing. Mm-hmm. And also, like, flirting in that game.
So that was a fun one to play. It was, like, the setup for some of these things was weird. Is like, why are you hanging out with these people that you don't necessarily know? But, like, I guess it's just been a long time since I was, like, a teenager or whatever.
Or, yeah, like, early 20s or whatever they were,
yeah,
supposed to be.
Yeah.
College students.
I did play, so we played it together and did one storyline, one ending. And then I played it myself this afternoon and, like, sort of speed ran it. And it only took me, like, 15 or 20 minutes. So it's a quick little game. If you just want to speed run through the different options. Yeah, and it was very cute.
I think that's something that I don't think we really mentioned, is that these can be very short.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They can be, yes, very long.
So some of the ones I played, I was able to finish in, like, less than an hour. And that's me reading out the dialogue and talking to people. And so if you're playing it by yourself, you could finish it in, like, 20 minutes. And others are going to take you hours and hours to go through even just one thread. And then you might be able to replay it and play a different character or whatever it happens to be, make different choices. But that was, yeah, a fun stream. Check that one out. RJ, do you have any other titles you wanted to mention?
Well, I mentioned Bury Me My Love, which I think is an interesting one. And yeah, the subgenre is that this sort of, like, I feel like there's a bunch of games where you play through sending text messages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another common trope in these is the text message communication.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, which makes sense for this, like, text, like, dialogue option based genre. And we played a few other ones together. I haven't played any on my own. Otherwise, yeah, the other ones we played together were Roll Plus Heart, which is another D&D one, and Why Is This Dragon So Fucking Cute, which is another one that's, like, very fast, and the art style is, like, adorable and sweet. And
it's got great art.
Yeah.
Okay, number two. I'll talk about another one briefly.
You should.
You might as well be the organizing structure of this section.
Yeah, you've played many, many more of these than we have, so go for it.
My mind is melting. Serre, S-E-R-R-E, which I believe stands for Greenhouse, the French word for stands for, is the word for greenhouse. And I play this on stream with Megan. And this is one where we saw there was an option to play it in French. And we decided to play the game in French. And so I think that's one of the reasons I'm recommending the stream. Because there's an added humor element of us trying to figure out what the French in this game is. Megan's French is better than mine. Is
But that doesn't mean I knew all the words. So sometimes they were inefficient translations going on.
By far. But it was a really... You described the game, so I talk less.
Yeah. So this was one of the ones where I think there might not have been a lot of possible endings. But I don't know. We only played through it once. It was long enough as it was. And it's a person in a greenhouse and an alien spaceship crash lands in the greenhouse. And it contains an alien who thinks they need to conquer the world. And so it's the interaction between the two of you, whether or not you convince them, you know, not to conquer Earth or whatever, and what happens afterwards. So it was a very sweet coming together of two different people.
It really was.
I don't know if that's a good explanation for everything, but I really liked how sort of sweet and gentle and mm-hmm. cute it ended up being.
This is also the one I played. Partially because Matthew wanted to look at the art book, the PDF art book that's comes with the purchase version. I don't know. You purchased it and sent it to me.
for a lot of these things, there are art books associated with them. So you can pay what you can on itch.io. And so you can be like, I want to pay $1. I want to pay $0 for this. But if you pay more than a certain amount, you'll be given access to bonus content of something, which is kind of an interesting...
kind of like perks when you do a Kickstarter.
It is very similar to that. And so this was one that I thought was very cute. And I saw that there was an art book that if you bought a copy outside of this bundle, you got access to this thing that had some sequel comics to it. And so I bought it for Anna because I knew Anna had to play something as well. And I was like, I'm fine buying this. I want to see the art book. But you did play it in English, Anna.
Yes, I did.
I was just going to put in a quick word encouraging people to pay for games if they enjoy them. And in particular, if you bought the Racial Justice Bundle and have, you know, 1,000+ games that are, you know, essentially free. I mean, $5, but... yeah, if you play a game in that bundle and enjoy it, consider going and giving the developer some money. Because, games take work to develop. And I think, you know, all creative fields are undervalued and people are not paid enough. But I think games in particular, because people can play so many of them for free online, mm-hmm. There is... a hesitation to pay money for them, and you should.
I definitely have a short list that I want to purchase now that I've seen Matthew stream them.
Great.
There's also another thing to consider with this is like there's a book called The Rise of the Video Game Zinesters that came out like a decade ago at this point. And when I read it, I really disagreed with it a lot. And I don't really remember all the points, but it was talking about video games and things like Twine and interactive fiction as being a way for people to make their own games outside of the video game industry. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the visual novels on things on that you can access and games on itch.io in general are ones made by one person or very small groups of people. They're not making a lot of money off these. And especially there's a lot of members of marginalized communities creating these things.
Yeah.
The number of queer characters and queer concepts that showed up in the visual novels I played is much mm-hmm. higher than you will encounter in other video games.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of queer creators of visual novels. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that makes it kind of even more important potentially to go back and pay for these things because they're probably not raking in the moolah on these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have an article that... the game developer friend that I mentioned earlier sent me at one point because I have an itch storefront. I don't have any visual novels in it. I have small tabletop games that you could buy.
Yet.
But I guess we're putting a link to that in the show notes now. But I will also put a link to the article he sent me about pricing your games on, like, for independent developers and the reasons to, like, set a price instead of making it pay what you can, which I think is pretty useful and illuminating when thinking about, like, you know, paying for games.
There's, like, I come to this from a position of privilege as someone that is, while currently unemployed, has had relatively high paying jobs and things, and doesn't have dependents or other expenses like that, or health things making it harder for me to work. But to me, the important aspect of things like zines and these is making them financially accessible to as broad an audience as possible. And I think that's something that comes up with the people creating these games, because they want people to play them. They want people to find them. Mm-hmm. They want people to be able to access them.
Yeah.
And with zines and these things, like, what is the intention of it? And it's like, are you trying to make money off something, or are you trying to share what you've created with the world?
Yeah, I mean, I feel conflicted about that. And I will say that for a lot of, I've seen a lot of games on Itch and, you know, other things that people sell on Itch. If they are priced, we'll also have community copies. So, you know, if they'll put a price on it, but say, like, if you can't afford it, please contact me for a community copy.
Mm.
And so, like, I find it you should charge money for your games thing is something that I understand, but as I said before, coming from that place of privilege, would not do myself. If we make a Book Club for Masochists visual novel, it will be free, you know, no matter how much work goes into it.
That's probably true. We all have outside jobs.
That is untrue, Megan.
True. Yes. Sorry. I meant this is like, I just meant this podcast is not our employment.
Yeah. It's not a source of income for us, and we're not trying to monetize it.
No, we're not ever going to, or we don't even try to get funds back to support the costs of the actual podcast itself.
I mean, we could, like, that's the thing is that, you know, certainly lots of podcasts, like, I mean, the nice thing about podcasts is that they are free, even if there are ways to pay for them. Like, a lot of them are, you know, Patreon or other subscription based service where the actual thing you are making is free and people can choose to support it.
I think we're tangenting.
The real reason we don't have a Patreon is because I'm lazy and don't like capitalism.
That's fair.
And I'm not ever going to put the work into it. Every single time we get one of those, like, sponsor things, or we get a talk about Patreon or something.
Please interview.
Yeah, or anything like that. I'm just like, yeah, effort.
Yeah, and it's like additional work since it's not our, you know, our full-time job that we rely on to pay our bills, then it's sort of this level of additional work to try to figure out how to monetize the thing.
Yeah, and it just does not actually cause too much of an additional cost load on us. Like, there's some, but
sorry, we're tangenting hard.
Such a tangent.
Yes, we're tangenting hard. Yes, so hard.
Sarah is very cute and sweet and funny, even when we're playing in French. It made me laugh and smile, even without being able to fully understand the language, the dialogue that was happening, which I think is indicates this a successful storytelling thing.
Yes. And I very much enjoyed the little extra booklet of kind of like concept arts, but also some comics about, you know, life post the end of the game for those characters. I particularly enjoy the illustration of the alien with a scarf on.
Yes. That
for some reason makes me particularly happy.
It was just very cute all around.
It was, yes. Yeah.
I was hoping you were going to talk about speed dating for ghosts.
Okay. I can talk about that one next. Sure. Speed dating for ghosts is the only game I've played on stream twice this month. It is a dating game, as you might assume. And you are a ghost and you go to a speed dating thing and you have other ghosts that you talk to and you can choose to go on a date with one of them. It's very cute and funny and weird. It's not like one of the dates is a bank heist. The other is like a murder investigation. Like they're not dates that you might expect.
Which one is a bank heist? This is one of the streams that I watched.
Yes.
But I watched the one that was the murder investigation.
Yeah, there's like 12 different ghosts you can date, I believe.
Oh,
and so
okay.
You only saw three of them.
I only saw three of them. They were great ghosts. I thoroughly enjoyed the ghost design. That was wonderful.
The ghost designs are weird and fun and like fairly basic, but still also very kind of capture the characters well. And this is just a well-written, fun game. That has a lot of replayability in that you can play through multiple different routes.
I want to know what happens with Bubble Granny. That's the one I want to find out about. I might play this so I can go find out what happens with Bubble Granny.
Yeah.
What kind of date that is.
Great. One of the things I will add about how some of the visual novels are out there. One of the tools that people use to make them allows you to replay easily and fast forward to decisions. And so if you're playing for the second time, you can be like, fast forward to the decision. And then if you make a different decision, you can then go and read the dialogue easily.
Yeah, which is fantastic for when one decision makes a drastically different outcome.
Yeah. And so it is like if you were playing like a book that had multiple paths and like go to page 47 or whatever, you don't have to read through everything again. You can just be like, okay, I need to go back to this page and then make the other choice from there.
That's why you got four fingers in the choose your own adventure.
Yes, exactly. All the bookmarks. And you also have save states in these things in some of them. So you can just save and then reload the save if you want to, whether it's because you can't read it all in one go or because you want to make a different choice the next time.
Mm-hmm. And I think speed dating for ghosts really highlights like some of the really excellent writing that goes mm-hmm. into them.
Yeah.
Like they have wonderful characters that are all interesting. They capture your interest. The stories behind them are not what you expected necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a really enjoyable experience.
I would say a difference for me in terms of how I experienced Sarah versus how I experienced the speed dating for Ghost that I didn't play, I just watched, is that in Sarah, it's one of those ones where you're not really sure that any of the decisions you made changed the storyline at all. In there, whereas with the speed dating for Ghost, it very obviously does change the story and change what happens along it. And you are making decisions and you feel like the reactions they have to the choices that you make, even if they didn't change the storyline, definitely change the way that the characters reacted to you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which was cool.
And I think comes out clearly in different types of visual novels, more or less. Like some of them are very linear and you just sort of, like Matthew was saying, click next page on an ebook basically mm-hmm. with pictures.
Yeah.
And some of them, it does make a big difference.
And it's also, it's so interesting to just think about these more in like how they use text to tell stories, because it's almost all dialogue and internal narration,
mm-hmm.
which in a book format would look really weird to me. It would just be like, mm-hmm. you know, two people talking back and forth and one person thinking, and then like maybe like a scene change. And so it is like maybe more like a play in some ways than fiction. And one I'll mention now that was because it was originally written as a play and then adapted to a visual novel is called Watch Me Jump, which is about a WNBA player and a controversy happening in their life. And that was kind of really neat to hear that it was originally a play and then turned into this visual novel. And I can see how it was intended to be a play originally, because it is like, you know, this limited number of rooms, like of sets that it would be in, and a small cast of characters and very dialogue heavy, mm-hmm. which so many of these games are.
Oh man, that's interesting if there was more crossover between those sort of formats.
Yeah, I would love to see more like that. I would. Can you imagine going to see a speed dating for Ghost play?
Oh my god. I don't know how that would affect like the choose your own adventure aspect though.
you would have everybody in the audience vote. Like you have, like if you go to fringe festivals and stuff like that, there are interactive plays and things like that where you're like, what should happen? And so you have people like, you know, raise their hands or yell out, and whoever yells the loudest, that's who you go on a date with in this case.
I was imagining those clickers you have in some classrooms.
Yeah.
Like A, B, C, or D.
Or, you know, have everyone like open up their phone and like go to a website and click the option they want to do. You could definitely do that, which would be really fun, I think. I'm just imagining people in the ghost costumes, to be honest.
Yes. Oh, I would love to see real life imaginings of those ghosts as costumes.
Oh, it would, like, that one actually seems like it would be a great play experience.
Yes.
It just seems like it'd be really fun.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
Please, someone do this. Turn Speed Dating for Ghosts into a play when we have real life again, I guess.
You mean you don't want to watch this on Zoom, Matthew?
It's not the same.
No, it's not the same.
Two more I will mention. These are the last two. Though in the show notes, I will have a list of others that I played and enjoyed this month as well. The first is Order a Pizza, a visual novel, which I played with the co-host of Finish It, a Choose Your Own Adventure podcast. And that's a podcast where they take a Choose Your Own Adventure novel, and every week they read through until they get an ending, and they just read it until they get every ending in the book. So it takes them months to finish one book. They are also masochistic readers. So I decided to have them co-host this with me, and it was really fun. An Order a Pizza visual novel is about like a divorced dad trying to order a pizza with their daughter and their new girlfriend. And it gets weird. It did not go where I thought it would go. There's a lot of meta aspects. It was very fun to play and very weird and interesting. Again, it uses very similar things to it. It's very linear in some ways, though you do have like the option, just like, okay, you know, you're in this room. How do you get to the end of the scene? And it's like, okay, you have to talk to everybody. You have to go through the dialogue options. You have to click on the refrigerator and look at the picture and like get new information that way. So it is very linear, though. It is giving you control of like what order you experience events within the thing, you know, which kind of gives you a different idea of how these can be structured. So you can have a narrative where the order of things is different, but that everything still has to happen and be experienced. There's a novel that was written that was released as like a bunch of loose pieces of paper in a box.
Oh my God.
And theoretically you could like shuffle them together and like read them in any order. And this is not as weird as that. It's more like an epistolary novel, which is a novel told through documents, usually letters. But you get narrative things where like, okay, here's a box with a bunch of different things in it, and it's telling a story. And it's like, here's a, you know, a report card and a letter and a newspaper article and some photographs. And by reading them all, you get a larger narrative that you can understand. Does that make sense? No, apparently.
My brain's just melting.
I love that sort of storytelling. I think it's really fun, and it's something I've wanted to make before. It's kind of like escape rooms. Take that to like another level with having like objects and stuff to tell a story and puzzles you have to solve. Okay, last one I'm going to Last one I'm going to mention, and this is one I think that out of any of the ones I've talked about, I would recommend people play the most because I think it is really interesting narratively and content wise, and also a topic that might appeal to the largest number of people. I don't know how many, like maybe not specifically listeners of our podcast, but the average person who is interested in books. Does that make sense? I don't know if like an alien crash landed in my greenhouse and I'm going to flirt with them. is going to appeal to someone that likes historical fiction or something. Anyway, this one is called A Mortician's Tale. And it, what it is that you are a mortician working in a funeral home. And the story is told through conversations with people and emails. And it was just like really interesting to learn more about what the life of a mortician is like and the things they have to deal with through their jobs and exactly what they do and what the funeral industry, the death industry is like. And it was inspired by, is it Anna? Do you know the name of the author
who Caitlin Doughty?
Yeah, who wrote like Will My Cat Eat My Eyeballs?
Yeah, and she's a YouTuber and author. Yeah.
And so she's done a lot to kind of bring attention to these topics. And so I think this game was kind of inspired by her doing that and doing that. And so that was one that I thought was really interesting, just because I think that learning about the things that go on in those fields is something that most people never do, because when they are exposed to them, they're in very emotional times when they're not going to necessarily remember or learn. You're like, when, if you're dealing with, you know, the death of a loved one, you're not going to be like, oh, what is the economics of funeral homes?
It's a really weird field when you start reading a little bit about it.
It is really very strange. And so that's one that I think I would recommend, just because it has really nice art. And I think the story it tells, that the information contained within it was really interesting and something that I think more people should know about. But it's done in a way that is, I found, you know, appealing and interesting. It was one of the few games that I went back after the stream and finished.
All right. Appeal factors.
You get to choose who to date.
They're not all dating
I know,
stories.
But that is an appeal factor for the ones that are. It's like, you know, like people like romance stories. Mm-hmm. And for some of these, they are a romance story where you get to pick the person, which I think is really appealing to people. People want that romantic aspect of fiction or whatever they experience. But, you know, if you're not interested in the type of person the main character goes for, it can ruin the experience.
Just how invested people get in which person you pick to date and marry in Stardew Valley.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for like video game fans, well, maybe not. I was going to say there might be something to the appeal of it being a video game genre that, like, in the same way that from a development side, the barriers are sort of low. The barriers are sort of low from the player side, where you don't have to, you know, have lots of experience with games and the sort of the hand-eye coordination skills or like puzzle solving practice or whatever. You don't have to like understand the more complex mechanics of games. Sorry.
If you've ever been blocked in a story playing, not a storytelling, in a puzzle game, and you just want to know how it ends, these are probably more up your alley than the puzzle game.
Definitely.
Yeah, you can just play through all the endings.
or watch someone online do it.
Yeah, that's true too. That's always true. the game that I mentioned, I can't remember it, and I kind of don't want to name it because I don't want people to like look it up and judge me. But the like game that I played when I was a teen, I did have to look up like a strategy guide to get all the endings, because it was very much this thing that I don't think was an aspect in a lot of the ones that you played, Matthew, of like not only like choosing the dialogue options, but like the right dialogue option wasn't always obvious. And also you had the option to like train in different appeal skills, like spend time in the library to like get smarter and appeal to like the brainy characters or whatever it is. That's the one I picked, obviously, but there are other skills you can train and in places you can go.
Some of them can be very in-depth in that way and have a lot of things from more traditional role-playing games, like stats and stuff that you might not even know about. Like it might not show you, you know, that you're improving your brain ability by going to the library, but it's keeping track of that in the back end.
Right.
I think another appeal factor is getting to experience stories created by and about members of marginalized communities. The number of just queer characters, trans characters in these visual novels that I played is so much higher than the general amount of fiction that I read in a given year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I don't want to keep going back to this one game I played when I was a teen, but that was part of the appeal for me as a young person. Not that the game that I played was explicitly queer or made by queer creators, but it was a game where I got to like date and have sex with a bunch of women, which was, you know, not something I felt safe exploring in real life, but was a game experience I could have.
I think one of the ones I played on stream, and that I think was potentially the game with the highest production values, was Arcade Spirits, which is a dating visual novel set in a world where the video game crash of the 1980s never happened. So you're working in an arcade and there's a bunch of different people you can date. But like one of the writers of the game came into this to watch some of the stream and talked with us about it, which was really neat. And they said that at the beginning of the game, you can change what you look like. You can change, I believe you can choose your pronouns. And you can choose, there's people of multiple genders that you're interested in. But they also said that there was options to just become friends with people. Like you didn't have to have a specifically romantic or sexual relationship with other characters in the game, which is something that like can really appeal to people as well. Like you said, those options for things that you might not be interested in exploring or talking about in real life, having the opportunity to do that in a game can be really exciting and rewarding for people.
Yeah. And I wonder, as you observed, that if so many of these games seem to be made by marginalized creators, or, a lot of marginalized creators are making these games, at the very least, if it's not just the sort of low barrier of entry thing, but also that the games are so, social and about, mm-hmm. identity and relationships.
I watched an interesting video recently that I'll link to in the show notes about the creation of the Diablo series of games, and which is
not a visual novel.
No, it's really not. It's a game, a computer game about fighting monsters all the time. And the creator was saying that they wanted to recreate the aspects of playing pen and paper RPGs into a computer game, and the aspects that they really enjoyed were fighting things, killing monsters, and collecting loot. And I'm like, those aren't what weird. I play RPGs for. but that the people that got into the industry and made these games, those were the things that they were interested in. They really drove the direction of the video game industry for so long.
That's endlessly me with video games. My problem is always all I want to do is literally go around and gather herbs and find little figurines and little tablets and meet people and rescue puppies for them. And I don't know. I just want to do all the little stupid gathery tasks and side quests in a giant universe that I can just wander around and doing this stuff. And yes, there are things I have to accomplish, but absolutely 0% of them require me to battle or fight mm-hmm. anything in mm-hmm. any way that's even slightly stressful.
there's an essay I read several years ago in a book for this podcast. I'll try and find it and link to it. And it was a satirical piece called Why So Few Violent Video Games? It was basically about a parallel dimension where the original Dungeons and Dragons and those early computer games about that had fighting as a main component of them focused on social aspects instead, and where the video game industry would be if instead of figuring out how to accurately replicate guns and swords in video games, we'd spent the entire time, the last 40 years, figuring out how to do emotions and communication.
Yep, that was a great one. Definitely put that in the show notes. I enjoyed reading that.
And because like the video game industry says like, oh, it's too hard to track that. And it's like, well, it's too hard because we haven't spent decades doing it. And if we had, like, what would the sort of games around be like? And so I think it's really exciting that these games based on communication and emotions are being made now, and like what they're going to look like in the future. I hope it will encourage more people to play games as well, because I think games are just really fun.
Yeah. I can't remember the title of it, but I'll look it up and put it in the show notes. But there is a game, when I was talking to that game developer friend, mentioned that is maybe a visual novel, maybe it's not, but it is a very like socially based game where you are, I think it's the post-apocalypse, and you're traveling around, and your dialogue options are in this sort of set of cards that you have. And so you can play these cards in various conversations, and you also get cards back when you have conversations. And like the more you play with, certain characters, the more cards back you get with them, the more cards you have that work well to play with them. And then say like you've been talking to this character in a new place, and then you go back to your hometown, and all of a sudden you don't have the cards for your hometown people. You have like these ways of talking and interacting that came from these new relationships.
That's really interesting. And
yeah, I just thought that was so sophisticated and so speaks to what you're talking about games about like being social and communication that are being made now and doing really interesting things.
Yeah, and figuring out the dynamics of how it will work, and how do you make that into a gameplay thing, and how do you make a version of that that is both can be controlled by something like, you know, a program, but also really does mimic the way that social interactions and community works. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. That's very cool. Although I will say that, like, actually, what I want to do in the games is literally the things that cause me to walk around in the wilderness of some strange place, hardly ever interacting with people except to maybe bring them things to sell that I have successfully gathered. So, you know, I'm such an introvert, I don't even want to like interact with people in my video games who are literally just programs.
you want to play more walking simulators, Anna?
I love Stardew Valley in terms of like doing the stuffs. It's the like, I have to go give people gifts. Gosh darn it. Okay, fine.
I was also going to say that like what RJ talked about and what these games can do is also like give us a better understanding of our own thoughts and feelings and emotions. Like playing a game like that where you're like gaining topics and tools to communicate with certain people while losing ones to talk with people you knew in the past is something that can be like, oh, like this is, you know, how relationships rise and fall and how communication is such a key part of our lives that we may not talk about or think about.
I think that's great too, because it also speaks to like, if we're going to get slightly back on topic and talk about appeal factors, some of the appeal factors of reading literature can be about learning about ways that people interact and relationships develop and grow and how communities form and how relationships can change over time and stuff like that. And how people who live very different lives from yours might be feeling about situations that you've never considered. And this is another way of exploring that through a different medium.
For sure. I have a real basic video game new question, which is how much of this is platform dependent? Like, do you need a Switch to play a lot of these games, or most of them across multiple platforms?
Most visual novels that we're talking about are home computer based and have relatively low requirements to play. And so if you have, and some of them like will run like PC, Mac, Linux, like they're available cross platform a lot of the time as well. The ones that have higher production values are released on other consoles, like things like the PlayStation and Xbox and Nintendo Switch systems. And this is helps me lead into a topic I wanted to mention briefly, is that your library might have some visual novels on its shelves, because some of these games do get physical releases for those systems. Not often. Usually they're downloadable, but sometimes they are.
Yeah, if it's from a bigger studio.
Yeah, it's definitely, they're going to be the bigger ones. They're not going to be the ones that talk about relationships and stuff so much. They're going to be like weird science fiction, time travel, monster fighting adventures.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. Mm-hmm.
But they're still there.
Do we know that?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Okay.
If anyone has examples of other ones that are available for systems, like on disk, that you can buy and give to your library, do it. But like when I looked up the types of games that seemed available were like action anime style things.
Okay.
I'm not saying all of them are.
But if you request to your library, maybe they'll be able to get a hold of other things. No?
I don't know how many of the other things are released on discs that you can purchase for the library.
Okay. Then harass your local video game publisher.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Or honestly, like even having – like you can – have visual novels as part of your programming and collect, like if not your collection, your programming at your library. Mm-hmm. You know, you can do a visual novel club like a book club and have people play this thing. And like, cause they're often available for free, you know, it is, you're pointing people at something that they can access without having to pay money, which is great. And then having the library as a discussion point, or even running workshops about how to make them, how to develop them, having people from the community come in and give those workshops. I feel like doing those for teens could be really popular.
Invite a creator to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I was going to say some of the tools to create these games are free or like super low cost and something you could easily build like a workshop around.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Or even like installing computers in your library if you wanted to go to that route as well. If you, you know, when you allow people in your library again.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I think we might want to wrap this up before this becomes an exceptionally long episode that we never intended to be an exceptionally long episode.
What? Tangents?
Tangents? What now?
Some sort of math thing.
Tangents, and also that we may have set a record in this one for like how many pieces of media we consumed for it.
This is true. This is actually true.
I mean, set solely by Matthew, but.
And also for once, it was not Megan who,
It's 30 something. I don't even know how many.
It counts as consumption if I watched it, right?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
So as you might know, we have been publishing a list of books by authors of color for each of the genres we've been doing for the last few months. And in our off-genre episodes doing, backdated, that's not the right word, lists of genres that we've covered in previous episodes in years past. And for visual novels, I did not feel like I was able to put together a list of visual novels created by people of color for a few reasons. Like, one, authorship in games is often so much less clear than in books. Books tend to have one clear credited author, even if it is like a team of editors and publicists and whoever who put work into the book's creation. Whereas games, it is a lot more murky, like, you know, how much responsibility falls to each person. And even with that in mind, like, it can be hard to identify who the team members of a video game are, and you know, harder even from there to determine like how many of those people are you know, might identify as a person of color. And from there, like, how many people of color have to be on the team before you can say, like, this game was created by people of color? Like, what, how much does team makeup? It's complicated. So I, instead of like trying to do it and not feeling very good about it, I am just going to put together some links for resources related to visual novels for like Black, Indigenous, and people of color creators and gamers.
And next episode, we will have a list of technology nonfiction by people of color. One final thing before we get to the end. As I've said, all of the streams that I did this month, all of the games I played, the visual novels I read, however you want to phrase it, are available on our YouTube channel because we now have a YouTube channel. That'll be linked in the show notes. Subscribe to it, I guess. You can also subscribe to our Twitch channels, which is the streaming platform that I was using. I also hope to continue streaming stuff, not daily, because no. But
it's not a sustainable lifestyle.
No.
Not if no one is paying me for it.
Yeah.
But hopefully weekly with guests, I will be doing something. I don't know the exact schedule yet, but keep an eye out. Subscribe to our Twitch channel, I guess, if you want to know that, or just follow us on social media and you'll get notifications about when they're happening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Like, rate, subscribe, and leave a review so other people can find us who would also enjoy listening to us talk about these topics.
For all of our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m. And find us on Twitter at bookclub4m or on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things that we mentioned in this episode and social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode.
You can also suggest a genre or title. We have a form you can fill out. No promises, though.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, September 15th. We'll be giving an update on media we've been consuming not related to the podcast.
Oh, thank goodness.
Then on Tuesday, October 6th, we'll be discussing the genre of comedic or humorous novels.
You may have destroyed all of our tent making materials and you're not paying attention to this story I'm reading out loud at all, but you know, you'll remember that someone had a Pikachu shirt. Also, the library's cool. Is your computer haunted because it's spooky Saturday?
Right? That's it. Just managed to sneeze the headphones off my head.
Wow. Oh, no.
Barely caught them before they ran into the mic.
3 of my favorite streams in the show note. My roommate has decided to cook at 9 o'clock at night.
I can't. Do not eat food.
I'm annoyed, but like I can't be like, please stop cooking.
Yeah, no. It's starve for my podcast. That was me. You stole my words.
Oh. I only said one though.
My brain is so tired. I'm sorry.
I was very surprised there were no announcements this. I was actually going to comment on it. Where's the announcements? No, it didn't matter. I was just giving you grief because I could. It really does not matter.